What's up, everybody? We're back. Let's get live. Let's get after it on the Barn channel. It's the Top Button Podcast. It's always going to be the Top Button Podcast, and we're ready to rock and roll. Let's get it.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the bug, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Let's get it, guys. Let's get it. Let's get in here, talk about this scrimmage that went down this weekend, and overall have some fun. I got a couple of housekeeping items I'm going to go over really quick. Then I'm going to hit a couple of items from the scrimmage, and then we're going to open up the chat and get into the Q&A. First things first, we had a big conversation over the weekend. I know after the announcement last week, we talked about it and that we would be rebranding, renaming the podcast, The Barn. Well, they called me over the weekend. And they're like, look, we can't do it. The Top Button's just too good. The Top Button Podcast is just too good. So we're going to stick with the Top Button. So little reverse fake here. We're going to be sticking with the Top Button Podcast henceforth, forever and ever. Amen. But we're going to be hosted on The Barn YouTube channel. I see some of the same faces found us over on the Barn YouTube channel, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So Top Button Podcast, here to stay. That's number one. The Barn channel, you guys found it. All our shows are going to be located here. All right, let's get into the scrimmage. If you have if you joined thebarnauburn.com over the weekend, I did a full like play by play of the scrimmage. So I was there. I mean, literally charted every single play. Even had a stat breakdown at the end. And overall, thought a lot of good conversation and things like that. But I want to kind of break down how I felt about the scrimmage, and then, like I said, open up the chat for some questions. So right off the bat, the theme was clearly safety first. The theme, especially for first team, the theme was to try to make sure that you can get as much work done as you possibly can, but try your best to make sure nobody was injured. I think you caught a little bit of a glimpse of it from Hugh on Friday at press conference he did Friday. He was asked this question: what should we expect? What's something we should expect at the scrimmage as far as like how the physical it's going to be, things like that. And you could see the look on his face that he was concerned, because I think he said I just opened up my phone and noticed that Texas's starting running back CJ Baxter had torn, I think his ACL or something like that, had some bad injury, and he's out for the whole year. And like that was just in practice. So like you start your year right off the bat. Imagine if we started our year and Cam Coleman was out from a jump ball in a scrimmage, or for the year, or Jarquez Hunter was out for the year with some type of knee injury. It would be tough. So I think what they tried to make sure happened was that they could still get a physical practice in, but also try to save some bodies, try to save that physical, try to be physical, but stay healthy at the same time. So in order to do that, there was, I think, 14 or 15 total offensive drives during the scrimmage portion. 10 of those were actually thud. Or they call it thud, or like first contact, where it's not a tackle, it's not a wrap up, it's just like a boom, either a like a quick hit, or sometimes it was even like a one hand touch, and they would go down. So some of the plays you felt like could have gone for more. I felt like there was a time early in the scrimmage where Malcolm Simmons, who had a big game, caught a big pass over the middle, shook two or three guys, and like it would have been six in a game. It would have been six, but he got touched, and they blew it down. So that was one that for sure would have gone for a bigger chunk of yards. There was another time they're doing on short yardage, like third and short. They were doing some really cool things with the tight ends, motioning, getting them open, and they had a little play to Micah Riley where he got open. It was third and like three. A little like snuck him underneath, hit him, and he had a full head of steam going up the field. you know he's going to go for 14, 15 yards, but he got touched at, you know, 5 yards down the field and they called it down. There's no way that's only a 5 yard game. So safety was definitely, safety first was definitely the theme of the scrimmage. And I think that's why you saw a little bit more, you would have liked to have seen a little bit more explosion out of the first team offense. And there were, it was good at times, but I think that was overall, they were really concerned about injuries and things like that. So again, safety first. If you even showed a sign of an injury, you were out. You were out. You were done for the day. Keldrick Faulk got mauled by Jeremiah Wright on a run play. It actually got called for holding, and I thought it was kind of an iffy holding call, but he did drive him into the ground, and Faulk kind of got up holding his shoulder a little bit. He was out, done for the rest of the day. Okay. Even though I don't think he was injured, I think he was fine. There was no taking chances. He was still, you know, getting in the huddle, you know, not sitting on the sideline by himself, being worked on. Like, they looked at it real quick and then he was gone. And I think he was in all the meetings and stuff like that afterwards. And then Austin Key or Keys, our linebacker, he got dinged up, lower leg injury. He came out. He looked like a little bit more injured than a Faulk, but he came out and he never went back in as well. So, like, if you even showed remotely a little bit of an injury, they pretty much shut you down, making sure you could be healthy and sort of hang out and stay healthy going into the season. You just can't lose. We're very talented on the front end. The starting 22 are very, very talented, and there's depth there, but you just hate to lose a guy from a practice. If you lose him in a game, that's one thing, but losing him in practice weeks before you ever even get started in the season, that's just sort of devastating. We're not built quite yet to be able to withstand multiple injuries. So, again, theme right there, safety first. I think that was the big theme of the scrimmage. Now let's go to what everybody wants to talk about, is quarterbacks. I'm going to start with obviously Peyton Thorne. I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts. I'm sure for those that did see it, I'd love to hear your thoughts. For those that, you know, I'm sure you've read all the different coverage, I'd love to hear your thoughts. But this is my take on Peyton Thorne. Whether you like Peyton Thorne or you're unsure about Peyton Thorne, Saturday's scrimmage, he did nothing to change your mind either way. Okay, so if you like Peyton Thorne, he didn't do anything that would make you dislike him. And if you don't like him, or if you're not, don't have a lot of faith in him, he did a lot of the same things that probably make you not have a lot of faith, like not have a lot of faith in him. He was very accurate. He got the ball out when he had to. He did take a couple of sacks. He threw the ball downfield. He had a really pretty downfield pass to Cam Coleman that Cam went up and made a play, and he just barely stepped out. So it was incomplete. But he got the ball out when he had to. He seemed to make the right decisions, but there still seemed to be a little bit of hesitancy at time, especially when the rush was coming up the middle, to be able to, you know, get that ball out, make a quick decision when the pocket's breaking down and get the ball out. So I can totally see, if you are pro Peyton Thorne, you're fine. He was 13 of 20 with two or three throwaways. So in reality, he completed close to 70% of the passes, and he also had a drop. 70% of the passes he threw for a touchdown, pushed the ball down the field, made some good decisions. But at the same time, he took a couple of sacks, especially on third down, and he held the ball at times a little too long, which I think is what makes people a little bit nervous. Okay, I get it. Now, on the flip side, there were a couple of times where there's one really good scramble that he had, a couple other times where he could have scrambled where the whistle got blown dead because he was, you know, it's two-hand touch on quarterback. So he looks a little bit faster, looks a little bit stronger. His arm looks a lot more live. But the scrimmage I was hoping for, and I understand why. I understand you couldn't give it just give a ton of shots downfield. I get it. You don't want to get Cam Coleman hurt. Keandre Lambert-Smith was out. Let's just play it safe. Let's get some stuff cleaned up, and then, you know, it just kind of is what it is. But all in all, I think he did fine. But again, if you didn't like Peyton Thorne, there's nothing about this scrimmage that would have made you say, okay, I changed my mind. I'm in on Peyton. You probably feel about the same way that you did prior. Hank Brown, Hank got a lot of the second team reps whenever they were doing 7-on-7s or the offensive skelly, where it's just against air, like the all 11 go out there and they run a play against air. Hank would come in with the first team after Peyton. So it's pretty clear Hank's going to be your number two guy. One good thing about Hank, and I think this is what draws people to Hank, is that he gets the ball. He makes quick decisions, and he's a little bit fearless. So he's not afraid to rip it down the field, okay? Where he's limited, you know, physically, things like that, he kind of makes up for it in, I guess, moxie or whatever quarterback term you hear talking about of, I guess, just confidence, being able to diagnose and just go. He had a couple of really good, really pretty passes, really nice deep ball to Perry. Perry dusted his guy. I think Hank hit him, you know, just perfectly in stride. He threw an interception, but honestly, it was a dart. It was a dart, and the guy and Caleb Harris just made a really, really good play, turned his body, got up and made a play. And the receiver, I think it was Bryce, had him beat, and it would have been a touchdown, but I don't want to say it was underthrown, but the touch on it was a dart. He just zipped it in there. And then Caleb Harris just turned his head at the very last minute and got his hands up, and made a really nice, interception, but it wasn't really a bad interception, in my opinion. Moving on, Holden, the first drive was rough for Holden. I think he even had a play action and he faked to the wrong side. I'm pretty sure he faked to the wrong side and ended up being just a mess and a sack because Hugh got on him pretty hard. Hugh was right behind the quarterbacks and he got on him pretty hard after that. So, but after that, he kind of settled in. He had two touchdowns. He threw two really, really pretty balls. One, obviously, the highlight reel at the end of the scrimmage to Malcolm Simmons, where he broke one tackle in the live period. There was four drives of, like, full-on, full contact in that live period. And then he also had another really pretty pass to Bryce Kane, who had kind of broke free, kind of by himself, hit him. So, Holden and Hank didn't get a lot of opportunities because they had very quick scoring drive. They either had a very quick scoring drive or they had a quick three and out. So, and then Walker. Now look, everybody talks about, you know, everybody's excited about Walker. Walker got a total of like 34 snaps. Okay. And he got a ton of run, especially in the full contact period. I would have loved to have seen him be able to take the orange jersey off and been full contact, but obviously you can't do that with the quarterbacks. You don't want to risk that. But early on, it took him a little bit, but and his stats are not going to wow you. I think he was somewhere around like 9 for 24. I have it right here. Hold on. He was 9 for 21 for 85 yards. Okay. Not a great completion percentage, but as he started to get in rhythm, as he started to sort of get going, he was absolutely ripping balls in there. He had the prettiest pass of the day. He had a deep ball to Dylan Gentry and Dylan Gentry just dropped it. I mean, it was a dime. Like I hung out with some folks and we were talking about the scrimmage at last evening. And that was one of the first things we talked about. Walker threw a dime to Dylan Gentry and he dropped it. Unfortunately, Walker was playing with a lot of the, you know, walk-on wide receivers, the third, fourth string guys. So he was limited a little bit there with the talent, but boy, oh boy, can you see the tools. He can run that RPO and he can rip it on the run. He can throw it on the run with there's no quarterback in the room that has the arm talent that Walker has. And it was really good to get him all that experience because that kid, I think, has the chance to, actually, you know, I think he has a chance to take over eventually. I think once the light starts to come on and the game starts to slow down a bit, he has the most NFL tools of any quarterback that we have on the roster. So Overall, I think it was a really good scrimmage. The wide receivers, the young wide receivers are unreal. I mean, imagine hitting. Can you imagine? You know, I'm going to take a little bit of steal something from Zach. Can you imagine going and recruiting four high school wide receivers and just nailing all four of them? I mean, you just absolutely nailed all four of them. I was shocked at how effective Bryce Kane was. I'll be honest, quite honest, I thought he would be a little bit too small, but he's so fast and he's so like he seems like he's way ahead of the game mentally, understanding how to get open and doing things. And then Malcolm Simmons, I mean, my goodness, 133 yards receiving, two touchdowns. They were trying to do so much with Malcolm Simmons to get him the ball. He's special. He's special. And Zach and I are going to talk about him all like maybe for a whole show. We're going to talk about him big time tomorrow on Monday morning show. So Perry had a big scrimmage. He's still sort of learning the ropes. He had that big 60 yard completion from Hank. And then there was another play that was a free play. And I can't remember if it was Hank or who it was, but it was a free play. It was offsides. And Perry kind of shook his guy and he kind of sat down, you know, 10, 15 yards wide open. They hit him. He goes for another 20 or 30 yards, but it was also an illegal procedure. So it was like offsetting penalties, but that was good to see. He did have that big catch. He made some big plays in 7-on-7. He got some revenge on JC Hart. I know you saw the Twitter beef that I had with the AL.com writer of him retweeting that video. The one video he took of Perry Thompson for the whole practice was him making a catch and then JC Hart kind of ripping it out of his hands. Well, he got back. He got JC back in the 7-on-7 portion. It was just overall, it was fun. It was fun to see. I feel like you got an opportunity. Everybody I talked to, the size of everybody is crazy. Like you just look bigger. You just look more athletic almost across the board. So it was a lot of good stuff going on. So I want to try to get in the chat a little bit and look at some of the questions that we got going on. Let's go with this one. Noah Baggett. I heard from a friend and alumni that Rider Lions 2026 is going to commit Wardam. So that is Rider Lions. I think we talked about him briefly. He's a 2026 quarterback from California. He actually has gotten some crystal balls to USC, I believe, which is understandable. I mean, it's USC in California. But Hugh really likes this guy, and he went on a little tour over that little open period that we had, and he visited three schools, and Auburn was the last school that he visited. I think he really likes Hugh Freeze. I'm not too discouraged by the crystal balls. That one will be one. That might be one to watch. And hey, if people are saying there's rumors out here that he may commit, that'd be massive because he's going to be one of the top prospects in the country in that 2026 class, guy that can really, really spin it. Derek Anderson, so glad to see that you actually have the top button buttoned up. We gave you a break last week. I wear the hoodie sometimes, but if there's a polo on, it's going to be buttoned up. We're going to the top. You got to finish the job. There's no reason. If they're putting a button on the shirt, you need to button it. I mean, that's just – I don't understand why there is even a buttonhole on a shirt if you're not going to button it. So we'll kind of keep moving through. Asking about my hat. Unfortunately, I get almost all my hats from Auburn University Club, and it's a lot of times they make a hat and they don't make it anymore. So unfortunately, this one may be a single first and last edition. Let's keep going through. Yeah, I saw Hayes Fawcett put out a post. It was that a notable decommitment was coming soon. And, you know, notable should be capitalized because that is the first part of a sentence. That's the first word of a sentence. That's proper grammar. But he also capitalized decommitment. And what's the first two letters there is N and D. So I think a lot of people started to, assume, could this possibly be Deuce? Look, here's the deal. I don't think Deuce is going to be a decommitment. I think it's going to be a straight up flip. If he flips to Auburn, I don't think there's going to be a decommitment and a like a courting period from there. I think it's going to be just boom, flip. I'm now committed to Auburn. So I'm pretty sure it actually may have already come out that I think, it actually ended up being four-star defensive lineman Christian Garrett has decommitted from Georgia. So that's actually who the Hayes Fawcett tweet was. So I don't know much about Christian Garrett, but I'm going to dive into that shortly after this show and see if it's possible that, you know, it could be an Auburn target. Again, that's total. I have no idea. That's just total speculation there. So Drexel Kilpatrick, Simmons looked good. Understatement of the year. He looked phenomenal. I don't want to take too much of the stuff I got planned for the show with Zach and waste it right now, but he's going to be special. There's a difference between, you know, when you see a guy on the field and have like a good spring game or something like that, that can happen. But like you can just see the difference in the type of kid, the type of player this kid is. He's electric with the ball in his hands after the catch. It's not just I get open, I make a catch, and I'm down. Like, you're going to be able to get him a 5-6 yard pass, and he's going to be able to do stuff and make it, you know, take it to the end zone. His touchdown pass that he had, one of his touchdowns from Peyton, I've never seen a play like this before in a scrimmage where literally I think everybody did the right thing, like, but on both sides of the ball. It was almost executed perfectly on both sides of the ball. Number one, Peyton makes the right read, makes an incredible throw. And then Malcolm had Caleb Wooden dusted. He was completely beat. Caleb Wooden picked closed the gap on him and makes an unbelievably athletic play to jump and get just a couple of fingers on the ball. And then Malcolm tracks it after the tip and then one hand catches it and tiptoes in the back of the end zone. Like, you're happy with literally everybody on that play. Number one, Peyton Thorne, right read, great throw. Malcolm Simmons, honest, he beat his guy. So that's your goal. You beat your guy. And then the focus to be able to catch the ball off the tip, also big time. And then Caleb Wooden, number one, you're a safety on a wide receiver. You pick him up on a wheel route. That's huge. You get beat a little bit, but you close the gap. Then you make an unbelievable play. It's just totally unlucky that you just happen to tip it straight up. And then Malcolm Simmons makes the play. Like, that's when you talk about a scrimmage and you want to see things go both ways, that one play, you leave it. You don't feel bad about anybody on that play. It was a really nice play. Really good job for everybody. Everybody there. Let's go with Stark Bice. Who do you think starts at quarterback next year? And if it is a transfer, do you see anyone on our roster? Hold on, let me say this again. Who do you think starts at quarterback next year? And if it is a transfer, do you see anyone on our roster starting in the future? Okay, I think I got what you're saying. Number one, who's going to be the quarterback next year? I think going into the season, I think the plan right now is to be watching quarterbacks in the portal. I do. I think you're going to get a one-year guy because 2025 – when I'm telling you, when you start seeing some of these defensive linemen, you start seeing these young DBs, you start seeing these kids that were just brought in, and then you're stacking it with the kids they're going to bring in again. 2025, you may only be a quarterback away. So the problem is you don't know what you have yet with, you know, Walker, Hank, Holden, because you still got Peyton here, and you're hoping that you're going to be able to get them more game experience to be able to decide, are we going to pull the trigger? We could only be a quarterback away. So if you're a quarterback away from being able to make a run in the playoffs, is it Hank? Is it Walker? Or is it a portal guy? You may have to wait to see who that portal guy could be. There's been a lot of talk about people that think that's going to be Caden Salter, you know, finally from Liberty. That maybe that's the plan. You know, don't come – you know, go ahead and go off again this year and then come, let's make a run. I think as of right now, I think you're probably going to be looking at one guy in the portal for one more year. And then I think it's going to be all based off of the development of the guys on the roster. I could easily see Hank being the quarterback at Auburn. I could easily see Walker White being the quarterback at Auburn. Holden, he's got tools, you know, but he's been here a while and hasn't been able to just really bust through. I mean, this would be his fourth season at Auburn, I believe. So I got to do the math, but I believe this would be, possibly his fourth season, definitely his third season. So like, what point is he going to, you know, separate himself and go? I don't know, but I think starting off the season, you're definitely probably looking at somebody in the portal. And then depending on how the season plays out, what if Thorne goes down, Hank or Walker or Holden comes in and they light it up and you feel confident about their – you feel confident about them, do they go into the year now? Do I want to roll with what I got, or do I still want to go look in the portal? So I think for right now, I would say portal. And then let's see how the season plays out. Chris Hall, I don't want to go there yet. If you see in the chat, I just don't know if I want to go there yet. I think it's too soon, and I don't know that that's something that we really need to be discussing at this point. Number one, if he's a minor, and then number two, what if it's not true? It'd just be messy. I just don't want to go there, but I respect you for asking it, and you know, maybe that story will come clear in the near future. Going back to Derek Anderson, being that we have the quarterbacks we have, would we afford to go a class without a commit? Ideally, you don't want to. You don't want to ever. I don't think it's going to kill you for 2025 because I don't think anybody you bring in is going to be the guy in 2025. But you just don't. I don't. Yes and no. You know, yes, it's not going to hurt us. It's fine. It's not going to hurt us for 2025, but no, it's not ideal. It's not ideal to, you know, to miss or not bring in a quarterback for a class. Kind of keep going. Auburn Dad for life. Sup C5. Sup Auburn Dad. Appreciate you jumping in. This is a good point from Gyro. Garrett's a heavy Georgia Tech lean. Don't think AU is going to try to get him. That could very well be the case. Look, Georgia Tech's on a little bit of a heater right now. I think they're getting a bunch of predictions from a five-star offensive tackle to kind of beat out several dudes. I think that guy over there can recruit. So it wouldn't shock me to see if they flipped, they get some NIL together and they you know, make a little flip there. So Derek Anderson again at the scrimmage, who stood out or impressed you the most on offense or defense, and who impressed you the least on offense or defense? So offense, obviously Malcolm Simmons was the most impressive player on offense by and large. Defense, pick your poison at edge, okay? You take Jalen McLeod, who is an absolute blazer off the edge. Kieron Crawford, who is the most physically impressive edge pass rusher we've had since maybe like a Quentin Groves. I mean, if you look up Quentin Groves' measurables and then look at Kieron Crawford's measurables, they're almost identical. Kieron may be a smidge bigger. Derek Hall's another guy that's very physically impressive. This guy, he looks even more impressive, and he's fast as well. They're going to absolutely wreak havoc coming off the edge. There was a set at one point in time where you had Jalen McLeod, Kieron Crawford, Keldrick Falk, and then I can't remember the other defensive lineman. And I think it was Phillip Bleedy, but like you had four guys, and they got back there just instantly. Like it was just boom, they're back there, and it was whistled dead. It was a sack. There's some pass rushers on this team that we haven't had the options like to be able to do different things. And then to top it all off, I laughed out loud when I saw this. Amaris Williams is 270 pounds, okay? And he looks every bit of 270 pounds as a freshman. He's dropping back in coverage a couple of times. And I just laughed because it was some type of zone blitz look, and then 270 pounds drops back into coverage and does a pretty good job. I mean, they didn't throw it his way, and I think the play got blown up. But, like, the fact that they're comfortable enough with him, with his athleticism, to be able to do that, to me, just speaks volumes. It's crazy. Any timeline on Deuce Drake? Look, I'm gonna only got a time for a couple more questions, but I'm this is a good one. Timeline on Duke, Deuce. Okay, so you're seeing a lot of Notre Dame folks say, "Oh, if we can get past the eighth, oh, if we get past the next 24 hours, it's good." The problem with that is there's never been Deuce has never committed to it. There's never been a date. There's never been a date where he says, "I'm gonna flip on this date," and then change his mind and the timeline gets moved out. That's never been the case. So every time you see one of these Notre Dame articles, oh, if we can just get past Monday, oh, if we get past, it's not coming from Deuce. Okay, like it's not like they have a timeline and then Deuce is they're convincing him to not do it and it pushes it back a little bit further. Deuce is always going to be an end of the month guy. Okay, just write that down and remember that. Could he commit earlier or flip earlier? Sure, but I think he's going to be an end of the month guy, and I am like supremely confident at this point in time that Deuce is still going to be your quarterback. So I would look at a couple of things. Typically, you know, if it's something like a special type date or something like that, he's got a jamboree on the 23rd. That would be something to possibly look at, or some type of pep rally or midweek deal before his first game. I do think Auburn wants to go ahead and try to get it done, and I think he's kind of given the indications that he wants to shut it down before the season starts. So that's what I'm looking at, that last part of August, and I think we're fine. I think we're gonna I think we're gonna be good. Let's see. Let's keep going through. Stark Bice again. How did the O-line look in the scrimmage? It depends on what you're looking at. This is two public scrimmages in a row. Okay. Two public scrimmages in a row where we could not get any type of push running the ball. Now, it is a scenario where it's a thud scenario, a first contact, so they're not being able to break tackles. They're not being able to, you know, go the distance, you know, and finish off runs. So that does matter. But this is twice now where Auburn's had trouble running the football. Now, look, it's hard to have to, like, worry based off of how great they did run the ball last year with zero passing threat. But still, you got a little bit of worry. Hey, this is twice now. What's the deal? Why are we not being able to get, you know, get any kind of push? I think you did not have 100 yards rushing between all the running backs, and you average about 3 yards a carry or less during this scrimmage. So I would say the offensive line in general looked okay at times, but running the ball, it seems to be at least from the what we get to see, the windows we get to see, seems to be a little bit of a question mark. And then the interior, which we've been so excited about, they got beat quite a bit up the middle as far as the pass rush goes, especially the first team. I don't know how you weight that. Is it first team defensive line's really good or first team offensive line? The middle, the interior part has struggled, but hard to say, but the interior defensive line was dominant. They controlled the line of scrimmage. Jason Jones, Isaiah Reichs, Philip Bleedy, Gage Keys, when they got in there, Keldrick Falk, they controlled the line of scrimmage. Like, there was not much to be done right there in the middle of the line. Everything was having to get on the exterior, like having to get outside. Sean Jackson busted a couple outside when Jarquez had any success, very little, it was outside, bouncing it outside as well. So that's something to watch. That's a little bit of a question mark, but we'll just kind of see how that goes. I think that may be it for tonight. I think I really like this Sunday night slot. I really like this Sunday night kind of powwow get together. I hope you guys enjoy it. And we kind of make this thing a maybe a more permanent thing. So we'll see. Maybe we'll bring on some folks to join us and have some fun as well and dive into it. But I really appreciate the participation. You guys are great guys in the chat. Awesome job. Awesome questions. And we'll get after it. We're going to have a great week of shows it's still going to be the top button. So if you got it on audio, you don't have to do anything different. If you're listening to this now, if you're watching this live now, you already made it to the new YouTube channel, and it looks like it. Y'all found it really well, because we have some. This is one of the best as far as live viewings that we've had, as far as number of people watching it live. So that's awesome. So yeah, be watching for the any announcements and things like that from the barn. Make sure you join thebarnauburn.com. If you remember thebarnauburn.com, you had already had all of this. I gave a scrimmage breakdown, had all the stats, as well as a play-by-play. And we're going to kind of try to keep that a theme moving forward. But, guys, I really appreciate you listening. And we will do this again. Catch us tomorrow, live tomorrow morning. Zach and I are going to break down a little bit more in depth some of the scrimmage pieces that we didn't get to talk about tonight. But, guys, I really appreciate it. Y'all have a great evening, and we'll get after it tomorrow. This is another episode of the Top Button Podcast, and it's always going to be the Top Button Podcast forever. So thanks again, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.